The web that has no rebar. Understanding Chinese medicine. Appendix E. The scientific encounter with East Asian medicine. Efficacy and adverse events. Until about 1955, both East Asian medicine and biomedicine shared similar explicit standards for determining the acceptability of a medical intervention. Legitimacy was defined by beneficial outcome. While physicians in both traditions also spoke of medicine based on proven or recognized principles, and inevitably were influenced by cultural assumptions, acceptable therapy was ultimately expected to deliver relief, if not cure. In the years after World War II, biomedicine underwent a dramatic shift. Major reforms were undertaken in medical research that sought to free therapeutic evaluations from human judgment based on clinical experience and impressions. Comparative experiments were rare before World War II. The first controlled clinical trial that allocated treatment arms by random assignment was performed in 1948. Inferential statistics was gradually accepted as surrogate for determinism in the 1950s. Placebo controls were slowly incorporated in the 1950s and 1960s. American and European regulatory agencies only mandated these methodological safeguards in 1960s and 1970s. The apparatus of the double-blind randomized controlled trial, or RCT, gradually established itself as the gold standard for determining legitimate therapy. A major shift had occurred. A medical intervention was now scientifically justifiable only if it was superior to a placebo. Method became more important than outcome. Superiority to placebo replaced ability to confirm health benefits as judgment criteria in medicine. Ideally, an acceptable treatment was now a relative outcome that could be isolated, disguised, and compared to the entire matrix of effects embodied in an identical healing ritual lacking the single ingredients. Healing was no longer an absolute outcome that comprised multiple interactive dimensions. Biomedicine reconceptualized legitimate healing as a cause and effect relationship between a specific agent or treatment and a specific biological result. Therapeutics that imitated the laboratory and depended on an isolatable, precise, and the single mechanism were privileged. For biomedicine, the masked RCT significantly aligned the power relationships between art and science in medicine, as it was itself a product of this transformation. Employing this new research agenda and methodology has been a challenge for conventional medicine. The commitment, resources, and skills needed for its implementation have been immense. Unquestionably, valuable achievements have been made. In the West, East Asian medicine has recognized that acceptance and possibly survival may depend on how successfully it addresses these recently introduced biomedical standards of legitimacy. Whether as a defensive measure or because of genuine scientific commitment, a serious scientific inquiry has begun. The following discussion is an attempt to summarize these ongoing efforts. It also addresses the issue of adverse events because, from a scientific perspective, the value of a therapy must include a comparison of its benefits with its risks. In general, this appendix looks at East Asian medicine from the critical conceptual apparatus one would usually expect from academic biomedicine, while the rest of the web that has no rebar attempts to allow the inner world of Oriental medicine to become visible to the outside world This appendix examines how science has begun to penetrate and quantify the inner Asian world. The appendix offers a yam balance to the yin unfolding portrayed elsewhere in the book. Clinical research in East Asia. The modernization of East Asia has meant the universal adoption of biomedicine as a foundation of healthcare systems. While traditional medicine has always played an important role, it has often had to define its continued existence and compete for the allocation of limited resources. Undoubtedly, the Western-style research mentioned in Chapter 1 has been a major factor in the scientific, cultural, political, and rhetorical struggles in Asian countries. Some of the methodological problems with research performed in China have also already been discussed in Chapter 1. The early research in East Asia lacked control groups. Later efforts adopted controls but still had serious flaws. In the West, a general skepticism has developed that the evidence produced in Asia lacks rigor and may be questionable. This suspicion has been partially confirmed by a systematic reviews of controlled trials on acupuncture and other interventions performed in China, Japan, Hong Kong, and Taiwan, which show that trial results are uniformly favorable. Such unlikely outcomes have reinforced already existing serious doubt on the reliability of scientific evidence performed in East Asia. Other studies demonstrate that even research performed in biomedicine in China does not meet Western standards. Recent indications point to an improvement in the situation, though. Because of such problems, this appendix will mostly be limited to reviewing the scientific evidence concerning East Asian medicine produced in the West. Clinical research on acupuncture in the West. Since the early 1970s, more than 500 randomized controlled trials, or RCTs, have been performed on acupuncture in North America, Europe, Australia, and New Zealand. While these trials cover a wide range of clinical concerns, the bulk address various pain conditions. Other especially well-studied areas include emesis, nausea, and vomiting, ophthalmology and otolaryngology, substance abuse, cerebrovascular illnesses, neurological problems, gynecological complaints, asthma, and gastrointestinal problems. Most of these trials are listed at the end of this appendix. A National Institute of Health Consensus Development Panel on Acupuncture sifted through this mountain of evidence and reached the following conclusions. There is clear evidence that needle acupuncture is efficacious for adult post-operative and chemotherapy nausea and vomiting, and probably for the nausea of pregnancy. Much of the research is on various pain problems. There is evidence for efficacy for post-operative dental pain. There are reasonable studies, although sometimes only single studies, showing relief of pain with acupuncture on diverse pain conditions such as menstrual cramps, tennis elbow, and fibromyalgia. This suggests that acupuncture may have a more general effect on pain. However, there are also studies that do not find efficacy for acupuncture in pain. Although many other conditions have received some attention in the literature, and, in fact, the research suggests some potential areas for the use of acupuncture, the quality and quantity of the research evidence is not sufficient to provide firm evidence of efficacy at this time. For such a prestigious panel to give a positive endorsement for the validity of acupuncture in at least some indications have meant a significant advance for acupuncture's acceptance in the scientific community. This note also demonstrated that, in some situations, acupuncture can successfully negotiate the methodological handles of rigorous RCTs. It is, however, possible to look at the evidence that the NIH Consensus Conference evaluated from another perspective. It could also be argued, as two leading acupuncture researchers have, that disappointingly little has been achieved by literally hundreds of attempts to scientifically evaluate acupuncture. It would seem that, with so much research, more clarity and conclusions should have been possible. What has been the problem? Designing, implementing, and interpreting RCTs is never simple. As a group, acupuncture researchers in the West have not had the resources and/or skills to perform trials that the scientific community would consider relatively conclusive and convincing. The simple fact is that, while research in the West is much better than in Asia, it's still methodologically weak. Researchers may have underestimated the challenges necessary to overcome systematic error and random error with an intervention as complex as acupuncture. Some of the problems in acupuncture, RCTs, are common shortcomings that plague other RCTs in any research domain. One of the most important of these shared problems has been that many, or if not most, acupuncture trials have had too few participants enrolled. This creates the situation of insufficient statistical power to show a significant differential between the acupuncture and the controls, when in fact a difference really exists. This is technically called a beta or type 2 error. Also, the comparability of groups in trials with small numbers is not easily guaranteed, which again increases the likelihood of confounding results. Other common problems include difficulties with assumptions underlying statistics and statistical analysis, such as choice of appropriate statistical procedure and hypothesis testing. Choice of measurable endpoints versus clinically meaningful endpoints or patient-relevant endpoints. Testing of poorly defined illness or vague enrollment criteria leading to heterogeneous study groups. High dropout rates and inadequate follow-up. Any one of these problems could make the results of an RCT questionable and subject to inaccuracy. Besides typical problems, many of the limitations with existing acupuncture RCTs have to do with unique acupuncture constraints that do not arise in drug trials. For example, it is unclear whether the acupuncturists in many RCTs have adequate training. The training and qualifications of the acupuncturist are often not mentioned in reports of clinical trials. For many trials, it is unclear what type of acupuncture was performed. Frequently, there is an insufficient dose of acupuncture, not treatment given to the patients for there to be reasonable expectation of success. There may have been occasions when what was considered that active intervention in ACTs was actually placebo control points. Few trials attempt to take into consideration the conceptual models of East Asian medicine or stratify for distinct oriental diagnosis that may not easily correspond to Western diagnosis. Almost no trials attempt to measure for the relative suitability for acupuncture treatments from the oriental perspective. The difficulty or impossibility of blinding the acupuncturist and preventing their enthusiasm from being communicated is a serious handicap and may also contribute to inaccurate evidence. Finding a suitable placebo or sham control in acupuncture RCT remains a serious obstacle in acupuncture research. Many researchers worry that needling at non-acupuncture is not analogous to dummy inert pill as a placebo control. The concern is that needling anywhere in the body, at both real acupuncture sites or non-acupuncture sites, may have physiological effects. Aside from normal non-specific placebo outcomes, random needling may have counter-irritation properties that initiate neurological processes or stimulate other physiological mechanisms, such as the release of new neurotransmitters. These responses can modulate pain and might produce effects beyond what are expected from an inert sham control. Especially in pain trials, using non-acupuncture needling sites as a control design may make the possibility of detecting a difference between treatment arms unusually difficult and lead to a type 2 error. This problem of finding a suitable and credible inert sham control in an acupuncture trial has actually generated an enormous debate in the research literature that is still not resolved. Review of systematic reviews of acupuncture RCTs. The methodological problems of acupuncture RCTs outlined above made deliberations of NIH consensus panel difficult. Much of the potential evidence may have been confounded. Caution was necessary and continues to be warranted in interpreting acupuncture RCTs. In fact, one of the primary conclusions of the panel was that research needed to be performed on how best to conduct an acupuncture RCT. With this serious caveat, this section will summarize the 17 peer-reviewed systematic reviews and meta-analysis of acupuncture RCTs currently available. A systematic review is an approach where each RCT is methodologically analyzed, evaluated, and often scored. A meta-analysis is a statistical approach which treats all subjects of comparable studies as members of a larger pool of subjects and then aggregates the result of these multiple trials into a single outcome. It is hoped that this review of reviews will provide interested readers with a better sense of the state of the scientific evidence for the efficacy of acupuncture. As mentioned earlier, pain is the most explored domain for the clinical efficacy of acupuncture. At least 8 reviews concerning pain have been published. The earliest such acupuncture meta-analysis was performed by a team from the Institut Universitaire de Médecine Sociale et Préventive in Lausanne, Switzerland. They meta-analytically pooled 14 randomized clinical trials of acupuncture for chronic pain and analyzed them in a variety of subgroups. For example, acupuncture for all pain, for lower back pain, for head and neck pain, larger clinical trials versus smaller trials, partially blind trials versus no blinding. The researchers believe that methodological shortcomings precluded conclusive results, but found that overall, most results apparently favored acupuncture. The subgroup of those 6 acupuncture trials that compared acupuncture with sham did not produce significant positive results for acupuncture. Subsequent to this meta-analysis, a team from the University of Limburg in the Netherlands published a more extensive review of 51 controlled clinical trials on the efficacy of acupuncture in chronic pain. Their review was a voting meta-analysis, which simply counts positive and negative trials and does not aggregate outcomes across trials. They found 24 studies had significant positive results and 27 studies had negative outcomes. Because the results were highly contradictory, their opinion was that acupuncture's efficacy remained doubtful. Also, they found the quality of the studies deficient and urged that future studies have a larger number of patients, more homogeneous entry criteria, fewer dropouts, longer follow-up, and better outcome assessments. A systematic review from the University of Exeter of 16 trials of acupuncture for dental pain reached the same conclusion as the NIH consensus panel. Most of these trials used acupuncture in a clinical situation, for example, as pain relief during dental operations, while five studies, predominantly the early ones, related to experimental setups where dental pain was induced to volunteers in a laboratory situation. While the authors could not aggregate across trials, they still concluded that the vast majority of these investigations suggest that acupuncture is more effective than control treatments, and only four trials imply the contrary. Again, the authors underscore that these findings are cautious and that many of the trials have significant methodological flaws. Another meta-analysis performed by a group from Exeter focused on acupuncture for back pain. 12 randomized trials were included in their study, of which 9 presented data suitable for a meta-analysis. By aggregating across studies, it was found that the overall evidence pointed to acupuncture as being effective for this condition. The authors noted that the trials included in their analysis are heterogeneous in terms of study population, type of acupuncture used, outcome measure employed, and length of follow-up. Thus, it is problematic to form a firm judgment. The difficulty in interpreting RCTs in acupuncture research is underscored by a later systematic review of basically the same trials for low back pain performed by a team led from the Free University of Amsterdam. Reviewing identical evidence, this team found that due to the poor quality of research, there is no convincing scientific evidence to show that acupuncture is effective in the management of acute and chronic low back pain. Neck pain was the subject of another systematic review of acupuncture from Exeter. Overall, the outcomes of 14 RCTs were equally balanced between positive and negative. Acupuncture was superior to waiting list in one study, and either equal or superior to physiotherapy in three studies. Acupuncture was not superior to indistinguishable sham controls in 4 out of 5 studies. The study concluded that the hypothesis that acupuncture is efficacious in the treatment of neck pain is not based on evidence from RCRs. Researchers from the University of Maryland examined acupuncture's efficacy in the treatment of fibromyalgia. The study found only 3 RCTs. The single high-quality RCT suggested that real acupuncture is more effective than sham acupuncture. The authors called for further high-quality studies to provide more robust data on effectiveness. Recurrent headaches was the subject of a systematic review by investigators from the Technische Universität in Munich, Germany. A total of 22 trials, including a total of 1,042 patients, met the inclusion criteria. 15 trials were in migraine patients, 6 in tension headache patients, and in one trial, patients with various headaches were included. The majority of the 14 trials comparing true and sham acupuncture showed at least a trend in favor of true acupuncture. The 8 trials comparing acupuncture and other treatment forms had contradictory results. The team concluded that the existing evidence suggests that acupuncture has a role in the treatment of recurrent headaches. However, the quality and amount of evidence is not fully convincing. There is urgent need for well-planned, large-scale studies to assess effectiveness and efficacy of acupuncture under real-life conditions. At least 9 systematic reviews of acupuncture exist for non-pain conditions. As already mentioned, those for acupuncture in the treatment of nausea and vomiting have established the most positive scientific evidence to date on acupuncture's value. A researcher from the Research Council for Complementary Medicine in London found 33 controlled trials. Of the 29 trials performed on people awake and not under anesthesia, 27 demonstrated acupuncture to be statistically superior to the control. A second analysis was restricted to 12 high-quality randomized placebo-controlled trials. 11 of these trials, involving nearly 2,000 patients, showed acupuncture to be effective. The reviewed papers showed consistent results across different investigators, different groups of patients. For example, adult post-operative and chemotherapy nausea and vomiting, and different forms of acupuncture point stimulations. For example, needles, electroacupuncture, acupressure. The author concluded that, except when administered under anesthesia, acupuncture seems to be an effective anti-emetic technique. Peculiarly, the acupuncture performed in all these trials was a single point, which is pericardium 6 neiyuan, not the elaborate acupuncture discussed in this book. This may suggest that the methodology of the RCT can most easily detect efficacy when an acupuncture intervention is well-defined and discrete, which may create a single, simple, drug-like replicable model. The 3 systematic reviews of acupuncture for asthma reached 2 different conclusions and again underscores the difficulty in interpreting acupuncture RCTs. The first review was performed by the same team from the University of Limburg mentioned earlier. They found 13 trials, which were reviewed on the basis of 18 predefined methodological criteria. They found the results from the better studies to be highly contradictory, and that claims that acupuncture is effective in the treatment of asthma are not based on the results of well-performed clinical trials. A later review from Oxford University of 16 trials for bronchial asthma, chronic bronchitis, and chronic disabling breathlessness reached a different conclusion. This review felt that the earlier review was confounded because in some trials what were considered to be inactive shampoos were actually, according to traditional Chinese principles, active and real points. By retrospectively changing the definitions of real acupuncture to what was felt to be a more traditional criteria, the reviewer found that the literature to date provides evidence that acupuncture treatment can be effective and safe. However, an even later review from Ludwig Maximilians Universität Munich, Germany, of 15 trials, agreed with the Limburg team and stated that there is insufficient data to draw conclusions about the effectiveness of acupuncture treatment for asthma. The University of Limburg team also performed a meta-analysis on addiction. They found 22 studies and concluded that acupuncture was not helpful in relation to smoking and had an inconclusive profile in relation to heroin or alcohol. A systematic review from the University of Exeter of 4 studies on acupuncture for weight reduction found a similar absence of convincing evidence. 2 preliminary reviews have been performed on acupuncture in stroke recovery. A team from the University of Exeter reviewed 6 RCTs and found that, without exception, These trials suggest the positive effects of acupuncture on functional recovery. The evidence that acupuncture is useful adjunct for stroke rehabilitation is encouraging, but not compelling. All trials compared acupuncture with other treatment or no additional treatments, and the researchers felt that acupuncture's placebo effect was taken into account by any of the RCRs reviewed. Another more narrative review from the Hythe Hospital in Southampton, United Kingdom, reviewed 7 trials and concluded that the studies done so far have opened up the field but have not been conclusive. Temporomandibular joint dysfunction, or TMJD, was also the subject of a systematic review by Exeter researchers. 3 trials met the inclusion criteria, and overall, the results suggested that acupuncture might be an effective therapy for TMJD. However, none of the studies was designed to control for a placebo effect. The study called for more rigorous investigation. Besides systematic reviews, as mentioned earlier, there exists a large number of clinical trials on other conditions treated by acupuncture. Unfortunately, because of their small study size, lack of replication, or because of other methodological shortcomings, none of these particular single trials is able to offer reasonable definitive evidence for acupuncture's efficacy. Some of the trials are nonetheless promising and provocative. Perhaps the most important conclusion one can draw from this entire body of evidence is to repeat the refrain from the NIH consensus panel and most of the reviews. More research of a higher caliber needs to be performed.